So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Once again to the Ed Stringer Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com for all the latest in national and local politics and news. I tell you what, while you're at LouisvillePolitics.com, don't forget to join our RSS feed or our email and everything else, and we can keep you informed of anything new or what's going on out there in the real world today. In the meantime, so much going on in Louisville. The biggest question right now is, where is Ed Martin? We don't know. He should be on, hopefully, momentarily. He usually runs a little bit late on Tuesdays. You know, he's busy running that business that Barack Obama built. So maybe he'll join us, maybe he won't. We're going to start the show tonight by talking about nothing else but what? The Louisville Cardinals NCAA championship victory last night. Folks, it was an incredible game. If you missed it, find it online. It was a great game, back and forth. Both teams played with about as much heart as you could possibly imagine. It was really a shame that one team had to lose. It really was. There are three games, for me personally, that I think are exemplary of what the NCAA Championship Tournament is all about, or at least exemplary as far as heart of a team. And ironically, all three of those involved none other than Coach Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino yesterday was officially introduced into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, which is an incredible accomplishment. He's also the first coach to win a national championship with two different schools, and ironically, the two different schools that he won with are U of K and U of L, who are biggest rivals I can think of, the biggest rivalry in the country. So, you know, it's ironic. He won his first national championship with U of K, and he won his second with the University of Louisville. He's now a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame. And this was a great year for Louisville, because this is also the first time in history there have been three teams that have actually made it. The women's team and the men's Division I team have made it to the NCAA championship game. UConn was the last one until now. University of Louisville, both their men's and women's basketball teams made it to the NCAA championship game. Louisville men won theirs last night. The women play tonight at 8:30 on ESPN. Make sure you check that game out. But what they're first in is not only did both teams make it to the national championship final game, this is also the year that UofL football won a major BCS bowl with the Sugar Bowl. So if you think Louisville doesn't have a lot to be proud of this year, you're wrong. Louisville has a great deal to be proud of this year, and deservedly so. They have done an amazing job all year, from football to basketball. I'm looking forward to that game tonight. Ed Martin just joined us. How are you, sir? Mr. Martin? Hello? Martin, are you there? Well, I'm not sure what that's all about.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, sir. What are you doing?
Well, I was...
You just went out again, man. Are you still playing with that smartphone you got? Well, he just dropped. I guess he'll be back. Now, I mentioned there were three games in particular that really have impressed me through the years. And by the way, folks, call-in numbers are 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. You can join us in our live chat if you'd like. And if you're in the queue listening right now, as a lot of you are, just hit the number one on your dial pad if you want to weigh in. But the first game, the first Patino game that really stands out in my mind was in 1992. Who can forget that game? And Kentucky versus Duke in the 1992 Final Four. To me, that is probably the greatest game that ever was played. It's probably today, I still get emotional when I think about that game. I'm a UK fan at heart. I always support UK and UofL, but I've always been with UK when they go head-to-head. But it was an incredible game. Martin, you there? Let's try it again. Ed, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. What'd you do, my friend?
Well, I remember when iPhones came out, they had that problem that the antenna was actually the outside of it. And
mm-hmm.
My phone overheated the other day. Left it my son.
Well, that explains why you had audio problems last night and tonight then. And there he goes. He just dropped again. Anyway, the first game that really stands out in my mind is Kentucky-Duke with Coach Rick Pitino back in the Final Four. If you remember, that game went to overtime. Sean Woods made an incredible bank shot. Gave Kentucky the lead by one, 2.1 seconds left. And Duke throws the ball the length of the court to Christian Lattner at the free throw line. Lattner takes one dribble, turns around, shoots the shot, and makes it and wins the game. That was probably the game of the century, Kentucky-Duke. That one stands out in my mind. Ed, we're going to try this again, my friend.
Okay.
Time to get a new cell
now?
Phone. Yeah, I can. You might want to go look at a new cell phone.
I got a good cell phone. It's just problem-free up to this point. But like I say, I think I took it out of its armor case, and, you know, maybe my magnetic personality is caused, you know, the phone is wrapped in malfunction. I don't know.
Well, we'll figure it out sooner or later, but we're talking about the game last night, and I'm telling our audience about three games in particular that stand out to me that will be remembered. And the first one, obviously, was UK-Duke in 1992. That game still gets me pissed off. I've looked at a replay of that shot about 1,000 times every year during the tournament, and I still find it incredulous that Christian Lattner, number one, was even allowed to stay in the game. He should have been thrown out of the game for intentionally stepping on a Kentucky player underneath the basket. They got a technical foul, but today it would be an automatic ejection. He should have never been in a position to shoot that shot. But, you know, I also find it hard to believe that the shot clock started about a half second too late and the shot wouldn't have counted anyway. So, you know, there's all kinds of excuses I can make for that. But that was a Rick Pitino coached Kentucky team. You know, and both of those teams, that was one for the ages. Both of these teams shot over 60%. And then the second game that I remember is one that was a Kentucky coach, Rick Pitino. It was in 1994. It was the largest comeback ever that I could think of in NCAA Division I. Kentucky was playing LSU when they had Shaquille O'Neal down in Baton Rouge. We're down by 31 points. You know, with 15 and a half left to go in the second half. And Pitino told Mashburn, take it to Shaq. Well, he did, and boy, did he shine. They ended up winning that game 99-95 in regulation. So, you know, and then the third game that I'll always remember was last night's championship game. What a hard-fought battle between the Cardinals and the Wolverines. I mean, it was really incredible watching these guys go at it.
Yeah,
you watched,
well,
right?
I tell you, for me, you know, I'm a lukewarm UK fan. So, yeah, the Duke game doesn't get me near as riled up as it does you. I tell you what, last night's game might be one, that might be the one for me, because, I mean, I was, of course, I had some bets with some friends of mine from Michigan. So, needless to say, when they started hitting those shots, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. You know, I was like, they're just throwing it, and it's going in. 3 points. And I thought, crap. And the bet happened to be some Michigan cherry pies versus some Kentucky Derby pies. So I was pondering where I was going to go buy my Derby pies and send them up. I was convinced I was a dead man. They're going to be the, you know, the greatest game of this Michigan's life. And they cooled off. But for me,
well, you know, I don't. They didn't cool off.
Last night's game runs right there with, for me, it's my favorite game, with the first Dream game. When U of L beat UK after all the years of all the years of hearing it, little brother and everything else, and it's like, yeah. And it went, you know, remember, that game went to overtime.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. I tell
and
you what was really fascinating.
And U of L lit them up.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we watched this game last night, man, I tell you, because one of the things, you know, we even mentioned on the air last night, the Michigan team was the one that I was worried about. If Louisville had to play them, I was hoping they'd play Syracuse. Syracuse always plays Louisville tough, but Louisville knows Syracuse, and there wouldn't be as much prep time, because these guys really, I mean, when they played Wichita State on Saturday night, you know, their legs had to be rubber. And I think at the beginning of the game last night, it showed how tough a road they had to get there against Wichita State on Saturday. But, you know, I really was hoping for that, for them to play Syracuse, because Michigan can light it up. Michigan has got three or four players that can shoot the three all day long. You know, and the biggest one to worry about was Burke.
And it turns out they had one that they didn't even know they had. It's Serbian, and it's like, good Lord.
Well, that's it, because Trey Burke, you know, Trey Burke is Michigan. He's All-American. You know, Michigan's Trey Burke was sidelined for the last 14 minutes of the first half because he got two early fouls. So at that point, I'm thinking, okay, now we're going to be able to run the clock. We're going to be able to run the tab up, get a few points on the board, and force them in. Who would have thought that this little-known guy, I didn't know who this guy was. Nobody fears this guy. Nobody else would pick him up at an Ivy League school except Michigan. Spike Albrecht, you have got to give this kid credit.
Yeah.
Here's a freshman walking into the biggest game of his life who plays maybe 2 or 3 minutes a game, giving Burke a breather, backing him up, and comes in and starts shooting the light out of the three. He had 17 points in the first half. Including a driving layup that just blew me away. He showed he was fearless, and he did it all in the first half. You know, so Trey Burke was out, and you're thinking this is the break that Louisville was going to need to control this game. It didn't matter. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
This freshman was incredible. You know what I mean? When you're a freshman in that stage, and you go in and nail four threes, and use a driving layup, and do all this crap.
Incredible wasn't the word I was using. I was didn't thinking this guy's made a pact with the devil.
Oh yeah!
No, nobody does that.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, here, you know, he led them and he got them a 12-point lead. So with a little over 3 minutes left, you know, in the first half, Louisville's down by 12. You know, you're thinking, here we go again. You're not really that messed up or that nervous, because they had just proved they could go against a Wichita State team down by 12 at half and could come back and win it. So you know they've got it in them, but the concern was still, would they have the legs to run 40 minutes of hell defense? Because that's what their bread and butter is. You know, it's an old Arkansas term. They used to call it the 40 minutes of hell, you know, under coach, former coach Nolan Richardson. But, you know, it was fascinating, because just when you think, okay, just keep it here, keep it close, don't let it get up any bigger for the next 3 minutes, go into the locker room, regroup, and play your second half, what happens? You get Luke Hancock.
Oh, yeah.
Hancock says, you know what, that ain't good enough. He goes out and hits back-to-back three-pointers four times. 4 times. It gives Louisville a one-point lead.
That's when, you know, you're going, we're going crazy in our living room thinking,
wow. Oh, it's incredible.
We got one of those, too, a guy who come off the bench and just shoot the lights out of it for no particular reason.
Oh, it was incredible. So with 3 minutes left to play, Luke takes over. And over the course of the next 2 minutes or 2 seconds, he has 4 3-pointers back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Gives Louisville a one-point lead. Michigan scored and made 2 foul shots right before halftime, so they went into the locker room ahead by 1. But, so Michigan did everything they said they were going to do. The problem that I was worried about with the defense of Louisville was Kevin Ware being out because, quite frankly, when Russ or Peyton Siva get in foul trouble, you don't have Ware there to back it up. You're losing a hell of a lot on defense. Ware is an awesome defensive player. And, you know, so Kevin Ware was out. I know Russ is tired. He didn't even start the second half because his legs were gone. They actually started Luke Hancock in place of Russ Smith, they said, because Luke had a hot hand, which may be true because Russ ended up 3 of 16. But, you know, usually when you shoot that bad, it's because you don't have your legs under you. So, you know, you need Russ was wore out trying to play double duty, if you will, because Peyton Siva gets in foul trouble and has to sit down for extended minutes. And then on top of that, you come out in the second half, and you're thinking, okay, you got Luke Hancock out there, not Russ Smith, so you're going to lose a little bit more on defense. You got to have somebody step up. Peyton Siva hasn't had a good game. Russ Smith hasn't had a good game. You know they're going to double team on Luke Hancock and keep him from getting those open looks. And what happens? Peyton Siva starts lighting it up.
Yeah.
Peyton Siva, you know, it's incredible. You just never know with this team who's going to step up. So Siva lights it up, and he finishes with 18 points. You know, I was just shocked by the way this game went. It was back and forth the whole way in the second half. I actually taped it. My wife had to go to bed. She couldn't watch the second half, so I taped it for her. And I'll end up watching it again later tonight because I'm still shocked by it. But it was one hell of a game, you know. And then, you know, when Peyton Siva had a couple of moments there where he was kind of, you know, getting a little bit winded, getting down to towards the end of the game, and you know, he's not really hitting shots. You know, he ended up with 18 points. One guy we never thought was going to step up, but I saw Shane Bohannon last night become a bulldog. I saw that guy grow in 5 minutes. I mean, this guy was beating people up under the basket, grabbing rebounds. He finished with a double-double, 15 points and 12 rebounds. 7 of those rebounds were offensive rebounds, and he did it all in the second half. Shane Bohannon came through. So, you know, you're looking at all of this and watching this, and you just don't know where it's going to come from because in the first half, prior to the last 3 minutes, I would have told you that the Cards were going to have a problem because of their legs. I told you last night Michigan was going to light it up. And I thought they were going to have a problem because of their legs. And I think in the first half they did. But, you know, this is why Rick Pitino is a basketball Hall of Famer. Because Rick Pitino can get the best out of anybody, no matter how dead tired you are. He has proven it time and time again, you know, with the Duke game, the LSU game, this Cardinal-Michigan game, Wichita State game. This guy, he's not going to be our coach very often. And, you know, Pitino is one of the best coaches in college basketball, has been for years. And, you know, I told you last night that this whole thing would make a great TV movie. I heard the announcers on Channel 32 say that last night, so they obviously listened to our show, too. But it was really fascinating, and you couldn't cap it off any better. You really couldn't.
No, you couldn't. You couldn't. You know, where the two stars of the game that just left everybody dumbfounded came off the bench.
Yeah.
Off the bench. It's like, yeah, this is like some. It's not quite like out of Hoosier, but I mean, it's just like really the sixth man, the seventh man, came in and their sixth man lit us up, and then our sixth man came in. And let them up.
You know? Oh, yeah, you're right. It was so fast.
What do you do?
Well, I tell you, look for Michigan to be back next year because, you know, Burke will probably go pro. He only came back this year. He's a sophomore this year, but he came back this year because he wanted to chase that NCAA championship. I don't think he's going to do that another year. But, you know, with Albrecht in there, Albrecht is going to replace Burke quite nicely, to be honest with you. From the offensive side of the ball, but you know, there's so many things here. Here you have Michigan's Albrecht step up, get 17 points in the first half. This is a kid who averages less than 2 points a game. Then you got Michigan freshman Mitch McGarry. Him and Albrecht are both freshmen, But Michigan's freshman.
He's a bruiser. Wow.
He is a bruiser, you know. And during this tournament, I mean, he was playing over his head. He was averaging 16 points and 11.6 rebounds a game. And to give credit where it's due, this is where Shane Bohannon and Gorgui Deng did one hell of a job. They limited this kid to half that. He got 8 points and 8 rebounds and spent most of his time in the second half on the bench with foul trouble. You know, they took it to him. They held him down, so he couldn't get off. And when Burke finally got back in the game, you know, Burke went and got his points. You know, Burke had 24 points total, and, you know, he didn't have much in the first half, and he had ended up the game with 24 points. You knew he was going to get his points when he could get back in the game, and he did. You know, but at the end of the game, you know, Coach Pitino always coaches his players. You own the last 5 minutes of each half. And Louisville typically does own the last 5 minutes of each half in every game. You know, the stats will back that up. They're plus, I think, 13 in the last 5 minutes in every game, and they did it. I mean, they did it. There can't be much more to say. I'm really looking forward to tonight. It would be really interesting. You know, this is the first team in history that has had a football BCS champion, bowl champion, and two men's and women's basketball teams make the final game. It would be interesting if the Louisville women pull off the trifecta tonight. You know, you're not going to see a celebration like that for a long, long time here in Louisville.
I tell you, as much as people, and there's nothing that you can't like about these kids who play for the U of L men's team. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're, like Rick Pitino said, they're just blue-collar kind of kids, you know. None of them are the biggest of the five-star recruits, you know. None of them are lining up one and done.
Sure.
They're, you know, but, you know, you say that about the men's team, but look at this women's team. I mean, they are who are they? they're number five seed. They struggled through the Big East, and then they just got gritty. I mean, they're gritty and they're tough. They're blue collar all the way. I mean, these girls are just absolutely. I posted it the other day. I said they're the scrappiest team in the state of Kentucky, bar none. They are.
UConn. Well, UConn is clearly the favorite in tonight's women's championship game. That's at 8:30 on ESPN. But, you know, it's also the first time a number five seed has made it to the women's championship final. You know, and Louisville's women were a number five seed. It's going to be interesting to watch this women's team tonight because one of the things that is different, Michigan relies on the three-point shot because they have so many shooters, and they showed that last night against Louisville. But what's fascinating is the Louisville women have that Michigan attitude. They rely on the three-point shot a lot to help them overcome. And so it's going to be interesting to see if UConn can shut that down. If they can shut down Louisville's three-point attack, the women are going to have one hell of a hard road tonight. If Louisville can get some early scores with the three-pointer, make them play them honest, they got a shot at this game. So it's going to be interesting. But UConn is clearly the favorite. They're going to be favored by double digits. I haven't seen the final odds yet or anything, but it should be favored by double digits. But, man, you know what? That ain't the first time we've had that happen and been surprised. You know, I tell you,
no matter what, there are only two college teams left playing in the United States right now, and Louisville women are one of them.
Yep, you can't ask for anything better.
No matter what happens, there's only one game in town, and they're in it.
Yep. You can't ask for anything better than that. So this is going to be a great game tonight, I hope. I'll be watching it as well. You know, but then we've got the downside of stuff like this. You know, people don't know how to celebrate anymore. They think they've got to get crazy. You know, last year Kentucky won a national title. You know, they were in Lexington. They were destroying property. They showed a burning couch outside in the middle of the street. You know, so you would think after all that negative publicity and the Louisville Cards fans were all talking about how classless it was of Kentucky to do that. And then what happens? We do the same thing here. You know, police and riot gear had to clear Cardinal Boulevard early this morning, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. You know, they were using pepper spray pellets, tear gas canisters. You know, at one point they were actually shooting paintballs at some of the crowd who wouldn't disperse so they could identify them later. You know, we had one police officer hurt. Of course, nobody's talking about this. But there was at least 12 arrests and 270 runs as of 2:20 last night, according to the Courier-Journal. There were shots fired, domestic disputes, of course, alcoholic fights, obviously disorderly conduct.
Yeah.
They actually had to, they actually arrested one guy for receiving a stolen firearm. And you're looking at this like, what the hell? You know, why would you put yourself in this position? Finally, about 2 o'clock in the morning, they also finally found, they had a news chopper flying around for hours. Finally, around 2 o'clock, they found a couch burning in Louisville down by U of L. So they went ahead and got that on the news as well. You know, but none of the news is reporting about
that was,
the officer.
That was put out there by a disgruntled UK fan. Come on now.
Could have been.
Just said, come on, they haven't burned any couches. We're not going to hear the end of it. Let's go out there and light a couch. We'll blame it on the U of L people. There you go.
Well, here is one disturbing thing, though. There was an officer hurt last night that went to the hospital. He was hit with bottles filled with sand. So somebody went down there premeditated trying to hurt officers. Now, as pissed off as I am at LAPD these days and calling them out for everything bad they do, you know, this is one reason why sometimes they get to the point that they do. From what I understand from some insider sources I will not name, so we will call this rumor, you know, for you guys keeping score just to keep us safe from lawsuits, rumor has it that there were about 30 members from the WTO crowd that showed up with these bottles full of sand and started launching them at police officers and ultimately ended up hurting one of the officers who ended up having to go to the hospital for you know, to get treated. So, you know, we look at this, but, you know, we've got to understand there's a thing called class, folks. There's a thing called taste. You know, why in the world would you want to sit here and celebrate and tell the whole world how great you are just to follow it up with BS, riots, and all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, start fighting each other and shooting each other over a ball game you won?
Yeah.
It makes no sense, you know. So
as I always say, you know, you got to look at it as like, what does it profit you? Not so much in the dollar sense, but, but what's a risk and what does it profit you? Is it going to benefit you in any way, shape, or form to act like an idiot? You know, or are you best off just walking away? You know, like, really? I thought about it. I thought, hey, I'd set off some fireworks or shoot a gun, but then, you know, I think of how hard ammo is to find and how expensive it is. No thanks. But, you know, I just thought, you know, there's nothing to be gained from it. My neighbors are probably asleep. Why would I set off a mortar round out of a, you know, an old used firework, you know, old firework from the 4th of July? No. Get a phone call from my neighbor. That's not going to do me any good. Just celebrate the win, watch the post-game show, went to bed, got up, went to work. You know what? Had a good time. I bought myself a shirt on the way home.
I live out in the Dixie Highway area, out in the south end, out in PRP, Pleasure Ridge Park. And, you know, you would think most of this celebrating was going to be done downtown around U of L and some of the bars down and things like that. You know, they were celebrating out here, too. People were having some kind of a horn honk fest until about 2 o'clock this morning. There were fireworks and gunshots going off. I know somebody was shooting a gun in the air like it was New Year's Eve. But there were fireworks and gunshots going off till 2 or 2:30 here as well. So, you know, this wasn't a celebration that was just limited to downtown. You know, this celebration went on all across the city. And it was great to see the celebration until you start looking at all these arrests, stolen guns, shooting people. You know, I could deal with the noise, but when I see the police reports and things like that, you know, we've got to have more class than that. There just has to be. So, it was pretty interesting, but, you know, I wish I'd have been on Cardinal Boulevard last night about 1:30 because apparently they had a mosh pit going with all kinds of nudity and body surfing. So that was a place to be, folks. I'll tell you that right now. We're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to switch gears. This is a political show. We're going to switch gears, get into a little bit of politics, and start playing some games with our good friend Barack Obama and our good friend John McCain and Mitch McConnell. So we'll talk to you in just a few minutes, folks. Listen to the Ed Springs Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springs of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
That song, it's almost like the government can to me anymore. I mean, it really is. It tells the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You know, Ed, we're so proud of Louisville and what's going on with these guys. I can't wait until tonight to see what the women do. But you know, we do have things here that we take care of. It's called politics. You know, and I'm going to be attacking the mayor's office in the very near future. These guys are now trying to hide from open records requests, and they're using the mayor's spokesman to do it. I'll explain that probably tomorrow night. We probably won't get time to do it tonight because we got bigger things on the plate. John McCain, you know, as we know, Rand Paul and others have threatened to do another filibuster if they try to take the guns. They're trying to protect the Second Amendment. So John McCain decides he's going to go on the news, CBS News over the weekend, and sit there and say he doesn't understand why these young Republican senators are so preoccupied with constitutional freedoms and are trying to stall a Democratic-led effort at passing the federal gun control bill. Are you kidding me?
A guy who spent time in a prisoner of war camp. No, I don't get it. I don't know what's happened to him. I mean, I think he needs to step aside and let his wife, Cindy McCain, take over because she seems to have more on the ball than he does. But you know, it's in a way, I guess it's good because at some point we have to, you know, if they were all getting along or something, this new breed of Republicans, these true conservatives, not the rhinos or the neocons, they would assimilate these people. So it's like, good, John, you know, show us what the old guard really thinks. Show us what they look like. Show us, you know, by comparison, we got Rand Paul defending basic constitutional rights, and now you're demonstrating for us, for everybody to see, side by side comparison of what the Republican Party has become and what it could be. So it's like, good. I think it's good for comparison's sake, because you know, if they just kept their mouth shut and stood back and did, you know, watched and didn't make any comment on it, yeah, we wouldn't know where they stand. But it's like, good, thank you, John, because now we know that you and Republicans like you are ever bit as bad as the incrementalists. Democrats or anybody else like that who would incrementally expand the government's role in our personal lives.
Well, what makes this so hilarious is John McCain. I mean, he says, here is a guy who threatened a filibuster just a couple of years ago in 2010 to try to repeal, to block a repeal of the don't ask, don't tell policy on homosexuality in the military. So this guy clearly thinks that don't ask, don't tell is serious enough to try to filibuster, to block passing this, but it's not important enough to use to protect our constitutional freedoms. I mean, this is also the same guy who has sided in favor of using the filibuster 287 times. Now, he's had 712 opportunities to do the filibuster. You guys can go to personalliberty.com to look at this. He's had 712 occasions that gave him the opportunity to use the filibuster, and he used it 287 times. So...
Yeah, but he didn't do it the manly way that Rand Paul does it.
He just sticks his hand up.
It's in the paper and says, I protest, or, I hear about filibuster this, or whatever the hell they do. They didn't stand up and do it Mr. Smith goes to Washington style. They did it the wussy way.
Oh, exactly. He didn't got the balls to do a proper filibuster. He just does a procedural one. But, it's interesting. But here he is trying to block repealing homosexual laws in the military, and that's so important. He has to put a filibuster out there to protect the whole world from these evil homosexuals, and it's not important to support a filibuster.
They're going to try to convert the whole military.
It's fascinating to me. This guy is the biggest hypocrite. He's the biggest liberal-loving piece of garbage I think I've ever seen. At one time,
I don't even think he's a liberal. He is a classic neocon. I mean, he absolutely wants to insert the government into personal relationships. And, as I said when I was a candidate, it comes down to when that whole question was up, it comes down to he is actually, he fought to support institutional discrimination is what he did. And that was worthy of a fight. But the Bill of Rights is not. You know what? Like I say, good. Now we know. And we see a very clear difference between, we see what the old neocons are about.
Well, I don't even think he's a traditional neocon. I really don't, because John McCain, you got to understand where he's out of Arizona, which is one of the most conservative states there are. Texas is number one, obviously, but his constituency is the radical right-wing Christian conservative group. I don't think McCain personally has a bias against homosexuality, but he's going to play that card
his wife is all for equal rights.
Oh, exactly, and he's not, and that's why I say he's a hypocrite. He's a typical politician. He's going to lie, cheat, and steal, and say whatever he has to say to keep himself elected, which is what he did in 2010 when he tried to block the repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But for him to sit here after threatening or using a filibuster 287 times out of 712 opportunities, that's more than a third of the time he's actually used the filibuster to his advantage, and to sit here using it over silly shit like the don't ask, don't tell, and I'm sorry for the language, folks, but this guy really pisses me off. He really does. And then to sit here and chastise somebody like Rand Paul.
And it really is silly shit, because when you think about it, they repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and lo and behold, the military has not fallen apart on us. It hasn't, it hasn't gone all rainbow on us. It still functions quite well.
I know. Imagine that, right? When I served back in the 80s, we had guys that were homosexual. They were in the closet. They couldn't go public. But I knew three or four guys that I served with that were homosexuals. That wasn't an issue for me. It wasn't an issue for most soldiers. Most soldiers know that the only thing you have to worry about the guy next to you is if he's going to protect you, period. If he's going to stand up and fight beside you or cover your butt, and don't take that the wrong way, you gay bashers, okay? But is he going to be there for you? That was it. What you do in your personal life is your personal business, and nobody in the military really cares about that, or at least they didn't. They've tried to make it a divisive thing. But to sit here and make a statement, trying to chastise Senator Rand Paul and the other conservative senators who are trying to protect constitutional freedoms, and this guy puts it out on a limb for idiotic stuff. It just defies, like, I can't understand how the people of Arizona continue electing him. I really don't. I don't know how he pulls it off, but he does. And then we've got other things coming out today, Ed. Mitch McConnell. Apparently, there is an audio recording out by Mother Jones Magazine. Yeah, imagine that, right? Mother Jones Magazine has put out an audio recording that apparently Mitch McConnell's office was bugged. They were having a campaign staffer meeting February 2nd, and they talked about going after Ashley Judd, that, you know, they were going to attack her, you know, on everything they could. You know, her emotional, she's emotionally unbalanced. It's been 42 days.
That's McConnell's M.O., of course.
That's not just McConnell's M.O., that's everybody's M.O., Democrat, Republican,
it is.
Anybody.
It really is. Anybody that's in a tight race, they run a multi-pronged attack, and one of them is go after them personally.
Well, that's it. You know, and it's amazing to me that this became such a story. Our illustrious Courier-Journal, sitting out there now trying to force this into being an issue on the local level, trying to disparage Mitch McConnell, you know, but all, you know, all he did was say, hey, look, we're going to do whatever it takes. He called it a whack-a-mole campaign. If they pop their head up, you whack them in the head, knock them down. Every politician that runs for office, Democrat or Republican, uses the same philosophy. This is not a story. It's a waste of ink. It's a waste of time. And you're talking to somebody that doesn't even like Mitch McConnell. I've said that 1,000 times on this radio show. But how in the hell do they justify trying to make this a major story?
The major story is going to be that it was a bugging. And, you know, McConnell's office is going after him. And the thing that kills me about it is it's not like McConnell, and of course the Courier is going to try to make something out of it, but they're way behind everybody else, you know, including a faraway publication like Mother Jones. But they're trying to make this issue. It's like, but look, gosh, they didn't like have her investigated. They did all this was out there. They're just talking about using stuff that she put out there.
She wrote her autobiography.
She put it all out there.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, no, I mean, is it? I'd say it would be different if you had private investigators going back and, you know, digging through all this stuff, trying to find, you know, interviewing people, trying to find a teacher that says something bad about you when you're in the seventh grade. They weren't doing that. All they were doing is saying, okay, look, there's a given amount of information out there. There's interviews. There's tapes. There's all this stuff. And they're saying, yeah, we're going to use it.
Well, I mean, that's it. I mean, Ashley Judd put out an autobiography. She told the whole world she spent 42 days in a mental health hospital. She told the whole world that she suffered from suicidal tendencies, you know, and then she's made all these asinine, bizarre public statements. I mean, just a couple of months ago, when she was considering a run, she goes to a highly profiled, you know, college campus to speak to people and doesn't remember questions that are asked of her because she was giving eye kisses to her mommy in the audience. I mean, this is the baddie person that is Ashley Judd. Everything there is already public knowledge. You know, if they wanted to use it, they've got every right to.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be something that's
It was completely out there. As I say, you're moving in, you're honoring a run for essentially one of the 100 most powerful political positions in the United States, actually trying to knock off, you know, the most powerful Republican in that position. And you don't think that they're going to take that seriously?
Oh, I know. So the FBI is now investigating the wiretap, and I hope they go beyond mere lip service. This is nothing more than the Democrats' version of Watergate. It doesn't involve the president, but it involves a minority leader. Democrats want to sit here and cry foul at every opportunity, and they want to use these tactics. These tactics are nothing new by the Democrats. Nothing new. And it's nothing new by the Republicans. Let's be fair here. Okay? But this, if it's an illegal wiretap, I hope somebody goes to jail. And, of course, you know, Ashley Judd is out there trying to make this, you know, oh, my God, you know, saying that this is yet another example of the politics of personal destruction that embody Mitch McConnell. We expect nothing less from Mitch McConnell and his camp than to take a personal struggle such as depression, which many Americans cope with on a daily basis to turn it into a laughing matter. Blah, 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 blah. You know, there are millions of Americans that suffer from depression, you know, that don't spend their time in a mental hospital, that don't have suicidal tendencies. They get treatment and move on. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And if Ashley Judd, the only thing she had in her history was the fact that she sought help, was strong enough to seek help when she needed it, that's fine. You know, but this maroon puts everything in writing in her autobiography. You know, she sits here and makes all these asinine statements like the eye kisses to her mommy and everything else. You know, and the liberal media is having a field day with this, trying to start anything they can. Folks, the reality is this. Ashley Judd is a fruitcase. She's nutty. She's battier than hell.
She's a B-list actress.
I've got no problem with that because
I mean, she's a B-list actress. You know, that's the way it goes. She's an elitist. I don't hold anything against her, but the fact of the matter is she was Yarmouth, popped her name out there, and it's just, it was purely... And I have many, many liberal friends, and I say, fine, you know what? I'm interested in hearing what she's got to say. What are her thoughts on the economy? What are her thoughts on this? You know, all you say, well, if she stands up for women's rights in other countries, that's fine. What about the guy about to lose his house or his health care or something? What are her thoughts on that? What are her ideas? She wants to be one of the 100 most powerful people in the country. Give us some substance. And they're like, oh, well, you know, that later. It's like, okay, well, you're just stuff. That's all you are.
And that's it. I mean, you know, she has nothing, absolutely nothing to put out there. She is an embarrassment to herself. Should be an embarrassment to her family, if you ask me. You know, she has absolutely nothing to give. And I just don't comprehend it. But they're trying to make this, oh, my God, they're doing all these bad things against Democrats. That's not the case. This is something that goes on with every campaign. There's not been one campaign strategy session that I could ever possibly think of or have been involved in that did not look at public record and what can we do to discount this candidate, including my own. Now, are there choices to be made? You betcha. I could have went after John Brewer when I faced off in a primary against him in a House Republican race here. I could have went after him and put so much stuff out there, John Brewer would have never survived it. I chose to take a different road. I wanted to do the high road. I lost because I wouldn't go negative. He went negative, started lying to everybody about everything in the world with me. He went negative, and it worked for him. But that's not a road I want to go down. But every campaign faces that decision, and every campaign talks about this. And when you've got a high-profile name like Ashley Judd, you say she's a B-list actress. At one time, she was the highest-paid actress in Hollywood. So when you look at this, in play, and she puts all this stuff out there on public display, you haven't done anything wrong. You haven't done one damn thing wrong. And as much as I dislike Mitch McConnell and his style of politics, I'm going to side with him on this. And, Mitch, I know you got boys that listen to this show. I know you do. I've got the ISP addresses. You want some help, you let me know, my brother. Well, I will help you on this. This is wrong.
And the fact of the matter is, if it was a bugging, it's a criminal act. And they're, you know what? They need to find out who and where it came from. And up to and including, and I know Mother Jones will say, well, freedom of the press, you know, give confidentiality of sources and stuff. But no, at some point you have a responsibility to ask them, was this attained illegally or legally?
Yep.
Yeah, and it was right now, if you know, without anybody refuting it, or coming out and saying, oh, no, I did that legally, then right now I guess we have to assume that there was an electronic listening device handy, illegally placed, and somebody, or maybe a lot of people up the chain of command, up to and including Mother Jones, needs a good ass chapping, because they say, you don't put stuff out there that's illegally. You can't admit illegally attained stuff into court, and, you know, you have a responsibility. It's at what point do you say, well, you know, hey, I know this guy's dealing drugs because, well, I stole his car and he had it in him, you know. You can't do that. You can't break the law, even if what you don't like what somebody's doing. You can't break the law, outright break the law.
Well, it's like George Bush.
Not expect to get chapped.
It's like George Bush. You know, Mother Jones and everybody else wanted to attack George Bush for cocaine use from 30 or 40 years earlier when he was running for president and tried to paint him as a druggie. Oh, Barack Obama, everybody covered up that, even though he admitted being a cocaine user in his own autobiography. Nobody wanted to talk about that, but they go after Bush when he's a Republican because of it and let Barack Obama get a free ride. You know, Ashley Judd, you know, has these problems, but she's going to get a free ride because she happens to be a liberal. There's nothing wrong with telling a liberal they're a liberal, folks. They are. It's pathetic double standard, and I'm getting sick of the mainstream press trying to cover all of this up. It makes no sense to me. You know, I just don't get it. A couple of quick stories here yet I want to really get into. Up in New York, wow, imagine that. Spring Valley Mayor Noramie Jasmine was arrested Friday for accepting bribes from an undercover FBI agent. She's a part of the Mayors Against Illegal Guns member. She sits up there with Michael Bloomberg in New York at all these damn meetings acting like there's something, and she got nailed for accepting bribes from an undercover FBI agent. She went so far as to even teach two undercover agents how to do a competitive bid process so that they wouldn't get selected, so that the one that she was trying to favor would. It's incredible what's going on up there in New York, and we've got another example of the Democrats and their idiocy. And here's one that I've got to talk about. We're not going to have much time for it, obviously, but we're going to get into it anyway. President Barack Obama, I mentioned it last night, said he was going to return 5% of his salary so that he could be in solidarity with the furloughed federal workers. Now, that sounds good. Well, Barack Obama gets it. He's really trying to stand with us. He's going to take a 5% cut. Don't be fooled, folks. Please don't be fooled. Because the reality is, Barack Obama isn't going to do without a meal. He's not going to do without an airplane ride to Hawaii when he decides to take off on another vacation that we've spent millions of dollars on.
He's not going to pay the green fees to play on the course.
Sure, and he's not going to lose his house. We're paying for it. Since Barack Obama has become president, he has spent, just last year alone, now think about this number, folks, last year alone he has spent $1.4 billion, not million, $1.4 billion on staffing, housing, flying, and entertaining. That's for him and his family. Michelle is always on vacation. His kids come and go as they please. You know, if you want to contrast that, do you know what the Brits pay on the royal family every year for the same thing? $57.8 million. $57.8 million compared to $1.4 billion with this president. You think he shares your pain?
And Prince Harry is a lot more fun than our politicians.
Oh, man, you ain't got no doubt about that one. Hell, Prince William is a lot more fun than our politicians. You know, I mean, that's incredible to me. He spends $1.4 billion of our money. He's not going to lose his house. He's not going to lose his new suit. He's not going to lose his plane. He's not going to miss a meal. He's not going to miss a food tester to make sure
his pension will be
poison.
Fully funded. His pension's fully funded. His health insurance is covered.
Sure.
He's got it. He's good.
For life. But he's going to give 5% of this measly $450,000 a year salary he gets back so that he can stand in solidarity with you, the working man. What a crock. It's actually $400,000, not $450,000, but what a crock. You know, so he's got all of this going on. You know, his budget is going to call for Social Security cuts. He lied to everybody, the unions and everybody else, about this stuff. The unions are sitting here getting mad now because he's going after Social Security and retirees. Him and his good buddy Joe Biden lied to the labor force and got elected. Now they're starting to see that, but you can bet they're going to go ahead and go with the next Democrat that comes down the line. So he's lied to everybody. He's living like a king. Well, he's living better than a king, you know, and he's going to get 5% of his salary back. In the meantime, we've got a story coming out of Georgia, you know, about a grocery store, a local grocery store, went bankrupt. The Laney Walker Supermarket in Augusta, Georgia, went bankrupt. So they sat all of their food out on the curb because a local church was supposed to come pick up the food. So they went bankrupt. They sat all the food out for a local church to come pick up the food. The local church didn't show up to pick it up. So in this town, 41% of the people are below poverty level. They average 20 evictions a day in Richmond County in Augusta, Georgia. All right? These people are the poorest of the poor. They show up, was going to go ahead and take some of the food so their families wouldn't starve. Instead, the police were there and stopped them. They restrained them as they got to watch every bit of this food get loaded into dumpsters and hauled off to a landfill. This is your president, folks. How disturbing is that, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. It really is. You know, if they would even waste tax dollars, just, you know, but I guess they'll let people dumpster dive and they'll let them, you know, they'll
they don't let them do that.
They'll let them shoot a possum or something and eat that. But yeah, as someone else put some 3-day-old Krispy Kremes out on the sidewalk, you know, hell, I'd eat those in a heartbeat. But you know, they won't let people gnaw on that. But
yeah, why would you not let people take that food?
If it was a riot going on, people go in and take those food, and cops wouldn't arrest anybody. But, yeah, but when everybody's trying to get along and halfway do something with a bit of decency, yeah, the health department or somebody's got to step in and says, oh, no, I think there's a slight risk that those donuts or those green beans might be outdated, and just starve instead. Yeah.
This wasn't
a healthier option than eating a week-old donut.
You know, but this is common throughout the grocery industry. You know, SunTrust Bank. I want you guys to remember that name. SunTrust Bank are the ones who evicted the grocer. They're the ones that ordered the food put out on the street, and they're the ones that said that nobody could have it. They were going to dump it and put it in a landfill. Now you're sitting here talking about all these people in this daggone town. Almost half of them are starving. They don't have any job. 41% are below poverty level. They're kids. We always talk about kids. The kids are hungry, going hungry. You've got a great opportunity here. Bottled water. How bad does bottled water go? Bags of potato chips? Anything. You know what I mean? And they weren't allowed to have it. Now, a lot of people think that's uncommon, that was just really crazy. But I tell you, right here in Louisville, you know, I often tell people I work a job somewhere, part-time, full-time, somewhere, and it doesn't matter what it is, to help pay for this. Well, just, what was it, 3 years ago we had that big electric outage in Louisville due to the wind and those ice storms and everything else. Electric in our area was out for a week. At that time, I was stocking at Kroger, my local Kroger 2 blocks away. I was stocking at Kroger during that, and as soon as the electric went out, they had us immediately take all the freezer items, all the refrigerated items, ice cream, hot dogs, frozen pizzas, whatever, off the shelves, put them in baskets. They had 2 dumpsters delivered, and we went out and we scanned these things in our RF scanner so they can get their insurance money back, and we were ordered to throw them in the dumpster. Now, as soon as people realized what was going on, we had a lot of people showing up wanting to get stuff from the dumpster or trying to get stuff out of the baskets as we were throwing them in there. They weren't allowed to. Kroger said no. This is going to the dump. They wouldn't give people that. Now, we had an electric outage here for a week. Nothing was good. And we were throwing all of this away that could have fed this entire neighborhood in a 3-mile radius for that whole week. All they had to do was get a cooler with a little ice. But Kroger decided to throw it all in a dumpster and have it dumped in a landfill instead of letting people eat. So this isn't something that's just done at SunTrust Bank in Augusta, Georgia. This happens here at home as well.
I was going to say, it sounds like something Mayor Bloomberg would come up with. I mean, they got the thing where you can't give food to, you know, homeless people or homeless shelters if it's not approved.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really? So yep. I want to buy a pack of discount hot dogs and hand them to a homeless guy in New York City. I might get arrested because, well, the nitrates or the sodium or the fat content might be too high.
What it all boils down to is instead
the guy's going to have to smash a rat in the head with a brick and cook it over, you know, cardboard boxes or something burning. I don't know. It's like, yeah, these elitist politicians, they just don't get it.
Well, you know, I asked the store manager, so why are we doing this when people are hungry? We've got this food we're going to throw away anyway. He said, don't worry about it, just do it. So then I went to my frozen food manager, and I said, look, this is all your department. We're throwing this frozen food away. We're throwing this refrigerated stuff away. We can give it away. We're scanning it into the RF scanner. We're building up a list for insurance purposes. Insurance is going to reimburse Kroger. Kroger's not going to lose anything. So why are we throwing this away instead of giving it away to people that are going to be hungry over the next few days due to our situation. I mean, this was an emergency crisis situation for us. You know, and he said, because they're worried about lawsuits, if somebody was to take one of those frozen pizzas and it got a little bit thawed and they went and cooked it over a hot stove or, you know, a gas stove, whatever they cook it on, and they got sick, they could sue us for getting sick. So this was all about potential lawsuits. You know, so that's the thing. So we would rather have people starve and not have any responsibility in people starving to death rather than face a lawsuit because we gave them food. That's pathetic. And you know what else is pathetic? We're out of time, Ed. Final thoughts, my friend.
Final thought, just going to pick up on that. It's like, hey, you know, the country's screwed up, state's screwed up, a lot of places, cities are screwed up. A lot of cases because they got lawyers. I got a bunch of lawyers who don't know what it is to actually make something and earn something. And by God, you're talking about the, I don't know, I'm going to get on a lawyer jag, I'm sure. But yeah, here we go. Why can't people hand food out? Why can't they give it away? You know, play it old fast and loose, you know, zombie apocalypse style. Oh, because some lawyer might sue you. You know, it's a mess. It's just a mess. Between the politicians, between the left coast actresses and actresses, and the elitists and stuff. I just, you know, you come from working class. I come from working class. Our hands are calloused and whatnot. And again, we just don't. The working man doesn't get celebrated anymore. He doesn't. It's like nobody really cares to hear what his thoughts are on anything, whether it's common sense or common decency, giving somebody food or something. You know, a homeless guy, give him a pack of hot dogs. It just makes common sense to a guy who works for a living, earns his keep, and, you know, and tries to provide. But apparently the elitists, be they lawyers or just plain old rich folks or people that are disconnected, they just don't get it, you know. And then they go wrecking everything else. The higher up they get, the more power they get. They just keep wrecking everything. I think we're getting to a point, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, we got to get back to the, you know, to just hearing out the working man, because they're the ones that build things. They're the ones that take care of each other. They're the ones that get it. And we need to get away from all these elitists and stuff. We really do. And let them go argue their crap out in court or do whatever else they do. You know, we'll build things and fix problems. We need a whole new generation of leadership in this country, and it's got to come from the working class and not the elite business class either, because they're bad as politicians.
Well, I have to agree with you there. You know, it's really sad that it's come to the point where we would rather watch people starve than to help feed them. I mean, it really is, you know, and you know, chastise me for being a Christian all you want to. But, you know, giving somebody a hand up when they're down has always been a Christian way. It's always been America's way. We're no longer doing that. You know, when I see stories like this, a president who is abusing, I mean, literally abusing us, $1.4 billion for his own personal pleasure just last year alone, compared to $57 million to the second world leader and the queen and her family, that's alarming to me. While we've got people starving, we have, you know, grocery stores that aren't allowed to give away food that they're going to throw away only because, not that it's out of date, but because of things like this electrical outage or things like that with our local Kroger. That's disturbing to me. We would rather see people starve. Have we come to the point in this country where we just don't give a damn? Where we just don't give a damn? Because that bothers me more than anything. You know, we talk a lot about everything we lose and we give up to do what we do every day, Ed. You know, but I've still got a shirt on my back, and if somebody needed it, I'd give it to them. Because that's the American way. You help others when they need help. And to sit here and think that it's okay for SunTrust Bank or for the Kroger Company or anybody else to turn people away in need with something that they can do to help them that's not going to cost them a dime should be worrisome. For a president to sit here and continue touting the so-called achievements that he hasn't done, to continue attacking those least able to take care of themselves among us, Social Security, retirees, and the working man, that's disturbing to me. And these situations that we just talked about at the end of this show are going to continue getting worse. These are stories that mainstream won't report. You have to ask yourself why. Why is the liberal media so scared to let Americans know the truth? Why are they so scared to do their job like they used to do in the old days and report news instead of dissect news and tell us what's important? That's disturbing on a lot of levels. We have lost our moral compass, and I think that's a great example of why. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth will be here. We will have a discussion, I am sure, over world events, and I'm sure we'll talk more about Mitch McConnell. I will also be talking about an open records request that I sent out to Louisville Metro. And for some reason, the mayor's office is pretty damn scared because now apparently Chris Pointer gets to play the middleman between me and my open records request. He's a mayoral spokesman here in Louisville that has nothing to do with this situation. It has nothing to do with open records. That's done by somebody else. And
well,
now he's trying to hide information. Well, now they're trying to hide information. We're going to find out what information they're trying to hide. And I hope to have more on that for you guys tomorrow night. Mayor in Louisville is just as anybody.
I got a buddy, and as a closing note, okay, click on the TV, get over and cheer them Lady Cards on. They're gritty, they're underdogs, but I just want to see two titles come in 2 days. It's going to be awesome.
I'm totally with you, my brother. That's what I was actually going to close with. Thank you. But that's exactly it. You know, Louisville is on the verge of doing something historic tonight. And Lady Cards, the road has been paved. You've worked your ass off to get where you're at. You've earned everything you've got. Nuts has been handed to you. One word for you, go Cards. That's it for tonight, folks. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7. Take care.